Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
Today, we'll just start with having our guests introduce themselves, and we'll start talking about the issue of the day. It seems our summers are oftentimes dominated by Wrecking Ball, Lion Ryan, Walters' antics, and this is no different. And so we have two great guests today, Representative Rosecrans from Norman and Senator Mary Boren from Norman, and they've been up to some good trouble the past couple weeks. And so if the two of you would introduce yourselves, and we'll just start talking about the latest shenanigans. Rosecrans, would you want to go?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hi, everybody. I am State Representative Jacob Rosecrans. I'm the representative of House District 46. That covers Norman now. It used to cover Noble, but mostly West Norman and Norman south of Highway 9, and a little bit in Central Norman as well, which I just picked up in 2022. Yep.
Senator Boren, tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, so is my sound good, everybody?
Yes, you're fine.
Perfect. Yep, absolutely.
Okay, great. So I'm State Senator Mary Boren from Norman, Oklahoma. My district is the University of Oklahoma football field and 80,000 people in a rectangle around it.
Yes.
So my district does not look gerrymandered. Everything around it does. So that changed in 2020. I did have Lexington and Noble down in the southern part of Cleveland County, but with redistricting, they just put as many Democrats as they could possibly find in the area around the football field. So all the professors are retired professors, affiliated students, graduate students, people that wanted to make their home in Norman after going to school here, really in close proximity to the stadium. It does go out east enough, just enough, fortunate for the Oklahoma Turnpike Authority to go through my district. So lucky for the Turnpike Authority that their project ended up in my district. So that's my district.
For those who aren't aware, the city administration proposed two turnpikes, and they'll kind of be bisecting north of Norman and east of Norman. Into some pretty the eastern stretch of it will go through some watershed territory and misplace about 700 homes, correct? And so it's for those of us here in Norman, it's a pretty contentious issue that this is happening. So
yep. Jacob, was that 2021, the beginning of 2021, that February of 2021, or was it 2020? Might have been 2020.
When they brought the turnpike to being,
it was before the freaking election, because that was part of Governor Stitt's like big re-election thing is access, you know, the access.
Yeah, but I think it was end of 2021, because I think it was a big issue in 2022 and there was no issue in 2020. So,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So
the governor's race was 2020 too.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, no, because he came into office in 2019 for the first time. So,
yeah. Elected 18. Yep.
Yeah. Oh gosh. So, well, then it's I can't believe that happened during COVID too. Because see, here's how I remember it. None of us were told about it whatsoever. And I was at a coffee shop up here, and one of my constituents was like, "Hey, what's the deal with the turnpike going through my backyard?" Because I've got the one that runs from east to west, going right across the border of my northern border of District 46. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And so I was writing thank you notes. So I was in a campaign. So it had to have been, yeah, you're right, either 2020 or 2022, because, well, I have a campaign every other year.
It had to be 2022 because it was not an issue in 20. So.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought too. Yeah.
And it was my reelection year, and we had that big rally in March, and filing date was April. And so we had this big, ginormous rally at the Capitol in March, and filing day came in 2022, and nobody filed against me in 2022. And then the governor was still running for reelection then. And so then the whole issue was a big, huge, you know, issue.
You know, when you all were starting out and everybody was living in Norman except for me, and I live in Edmond, I was kind of feeling left out. But now after the Turnpike discussion, it makes me feel better that I'm being left out. But
yeah.
You know. Oh, I'm sure we'll
get all the Turnpikes are going to get up there already, I guess. So.
Yeah, you're going to be, why are you even asking for it?
it's crazy because, I mean, so my in-laws live. Their house is about a quarter mile, and then we'll switch to the topic that we're here for. My in-laws live about a quarter mile from where the Eastern stretch is supposed to go. And I was just horrified. I mean, I've lived in that house forever. And, but my father-in-law, like you'll probably be able to see the backside of it, you know, from their house. Like it's going to be that close to where they're at. And they're kind of in one of those more, rural subdivisions out, you know, off Highway 9. And my father-in-law was like, oh, this is great. It's going to be great for traffic. And I was like, I think you're the only person in Norman that's happy about this.
Well, you know? I think that it sounds good, but until the runoff changes the way, like there's lady out there by the Kickapoo Turnpike that runoff with all that concrete totally changes the way your land operates because the water pools differently with all that concrete coming through. And that's it totally put her house in a pond, and because she was far enough away that all of the normal remedies didn't apply to her, but her use of her property completely changed. So
yeah, anyway. There's, I mean, 700 homes, you know, and like we don't have 700 homes like on hand, you know, to replace them. So, but anyway, so what we are gathered here today is to talk about the State Department of Education, Board of Education meetings, some issues that they have. And the two of you have lately taken it upon yourself to make sure to attend these. Can you tell us kind of how that got started? You know, I think as a voter, it's always a great idea to know that our legislators do more than just, you know, go to appropriations meeting, hear reports that way or whatever. But, you know, and both of you are on committees relevant to this issue. But, you know, what really got your attention that you needed to start attending the State Department of Education meetings, board meetings?
Well, Jacob, is it okay if I?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So in June, it was a Thursday. I think it was June 27th. I get up that morning. I'm thinking about Sam Graffey's Senate district seat that he's running for in the Purcell area over Jessica Garvin lost the primary, and he's a Dem running for that seat. And I was thinking about, hey, he could probably do statements about education school board meeting. I wonder what's on the agenda. So it's 7:45. The meeting starts at 9. I look at the agenda, and on the agenda are items about teaching certificates being revoked and a transfer request being overridden. So some districts have denied transfer requests, and they are overriding those denials for some reason. And I was like, well, that could have a huge fiscal impact on these districts. I wonder if they're even taking that into consideration. And it also looked like that the way they were handling the teaching certificate issue, they were opening themselves to really additional litigation and legal expenses for like a losing game plan. So I thought, I think I'm going to have to go to this executive session meeting because somebody needs to be in there. If they're paying, like it's summer and they're like doing this fast and loose stuff in the summer when nobody's like paying attention. And I knew that the lawmakers had in the Open Meetings Act a right, a privilege to go sit in on those executive sessions if they had a jurisdictional connection to that meeting. So I figured out the email address for their new school board attorney, who's not hired by the state. She doesn't get a state W-2. She works for a law firm, and she is paid a contract. You know, she's paid like,
I'm sure it's on scale. I'm sure it's on, you know, the state scale for general counsel.
Not, it's $300 and something an hour. Somebody reported that they paid outside firm just in May. The invoices were like $35,000 that the State Department of Ed is paid for legal services. And if you times that by 12, that's a freaking lot of money that if you just had an in-house attorney trying to keep blind straight, that would definitely not cost that much. Anyway, I figured out the email address. I looked her up on the bar membership website and to get the email address, because they don't have a State Department of Ed email address. I emailed her and said, hey, pursuant to Title 25.310, I'm going to come to this meeting. Here are my jurisdictional connections. I serve on these three committees. I serve on the Education Appropriations Committee. I serve on Judiciary. And I serve on the Administrative Rules. And then I show up, and fast forward, I'm not allowed to come into the meeting. And so, of course, that there was a lot of drama around that. And then I decide, hey, I'm going to really research this issue very well, and I'm going to lay out the law to the school board members and to the lawyer and to Ryan Walters so that they have a fair opportunity to reevaluate their position. And I sent that email with that letter on July 19th. And the next school board meeting is, you know, July 31st. Later, I found out from the press that the AG had sent their letter on July 18th, the day before I sent mine. And so the AG comes out in the public and says, hey, you got to let her in. And I'm like, okay, well, that's looking better. And so I started taking pizza bets of whether or not they would let me in or not based on the AG's opinion, because people in town would say, hey, are they going to let you in that meeting? And I'm like, well, you'd think so, because it's AG. After all, they were elected by the state of Oklahoma. 790.
He's the top lawyer in the state. I mean, he has some authority. Like,
and he got, if you're just going to be straight up, like, political about it, he got 790,000 votes, 75% of the vote. Ryan Walters got 54% of the vote. And so it's not in his job description to be the lawyer for the state. It is the job description of the attorney general. So I get there at the meeting. I show up earlier. I get there at 9. And then they start handling me and start telling me to sit in this room and go to that room. And there are highway patrolmen everywhere, you know, like guarding the place. And then Jacob shows up about the same time. I was there probably maybe 40 minutes before Jacob got there. And then I start lobbying and advocating and reestablishing what the AG's opinion, their letter said. And Then me and Jacob ended up in this room with that. I guess you saw an Oklahoman where we're sitting there in this room and talking. The Oklahoman took that picture. And then Representative Osborne shows up. Mm-hmm. And Representative Osborne shows up because one of his teachers was assigned to executive committee meeting to automatically revoke their teaching certificate without due process or equal protection. So I'll leave it at that, and Jacob can kind of pick up from here, like what his experience.
I want to put a couple questions out there though, before we go any further, because the purpose of executive session, according to state law, correct me if I'm wrong, is you can talk about lawsuits and you can talk about real estate.
No, there's seven things in statute. Okay.
What else is it?
Well, I don't have my legal brief in front of me. I'd have to find, let me pull it up. I might find. I'll look up.
But there are parameters for what you can talk about in executive session.
Yes, it's a narrowly tailored two of these topics, lawsuits and I don't know, personnel matters, maybe it is. Two of them imply that you would probably very likely have a lawyer in that room with you. So to say that you know, terminates the attorney-client privilege is wrong because the statute assumes that lawyers will be in the room and the statute assumes that legislators will be in the room at the same time. So, yes, but the answer to your question is the statute gives out seven different reasons, parameters of why you can go into executive session.
Yeah, and as she looks that up, I kind of will give you my kind of experience there too. And honestly, it's a little, it's different than Senator Boren's because I have never been to any of the state board meetings. This was my very first one. And the reason why is because there was never any reason to go whenever, you know, under Hoffmeister, things were, they were boring. They're supposed to be boring.
They're
supposed to be boring.
Yeah, there's not supposed to be surprises.
No, and they're not supposed to be these circuses that Walters has turned them into. And that's exactly what I walked into. I mean, it was a big old protest on the outside, and there was, you know, for Walters and against Walters. And I give it up to the folks who have been fighting against him because it's mostly from the Tulsa area because they've had a target on their back for so darn long. The total chaos is really kind of what it was when I walked in there. And sure enough, like what Senator Boren said, we were handled. I mean, these people aren't mean. This young lady, Lindsay McSparran, was out there and she was like, hi, you know, I'm here if you have any questions and stuff. And she's apparently the legislative liaison to the SDE and she knows Ryan really well. So I was like, okay, well, at least it's not like I can just text Ryan and see what's up. So at least we have a line of communication here because
I'm sorry, but parallel universe, you guys would know her too. Like, you know what I mean? Typically the legislative liaisons for the agencies know the legislators and the legislators know who they are. So that's an oddity.
A complete oddity. And I mean, she's been it for a while too, but again, there's just everybody who listens to this show understands there hasn't been very much. There's been zero transparency between, once Walters took over for SDE. So again, I get there and the reason why I went is because what happened to Senator Boren. I was like, okay, well, I'm on the education committee. I know that state statute says exactly what Senator Boren says. It literally spells out that if you're on these committees and there's no question about me, that you're allowed to be in any of the meetings, including executive sessions. It literally says it in the law. And so I went in there and didn't know what to expect. And sure enough, got kind of, honestly, I don't think they wouldn't let us in the room because they didn't want to. They wouldn't let us in the room because it's such a small room and it has a big waiting list because people have to sign up way before, like at midnight. That's why they show up and then sit out there for that long because it's a tiny room. So by the time I showed up, it was at capacity and there's no way that they were going to let me in. Probably same thing with Senator Boren because that list, it gets filled up, like I told you, way far before that.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's.
But yeah, see, the time I went before, the month before in June, I got in there later and I just walked straight through the door all the way back to the boardroom and there were empty chairs over to the side and I sat in one. But because I got there early and they knew I was coming and I was on the agenda, they already had people there handling me, telling me, you're supposed to sit over here. You know, you have to sit here. And one highway patrolman was like, okay, Senator Boren, come this way. Come on. Like, and I'm like, I'm not going in there.
That's interesting. Yeah. See, so with me, yeah, it was completely a capacity. Plus I had already probably shouldn't have done this, but you know, I wanted people to understand exactly what I'm trying to do, but I'd already told folks that I was going to be there the night before and got covered. I think KOKH covered me on it. And so they were definitely aware that I was coming in. I wasn't sure if you were going to go in again, Senator Boren. So I was happy to see you there. And yeah, they put us in that, whatever they call it, the fishbowl. It's like a little off room where you can watch everything on TV. It's just, it feels like we're being handled. And sure enough, I think things changed a little bit once Representative Osborne showed up, because let's be honest, he's a Republican and he also represents Edmund, and that is exactly why he decided to go there, and he had not been there before either, like me. And it was really eye-opening to see his reactions kind of mirrored my reactions. And the main thing is just the lack of transparency
the lack of anybody really knowing what's going on or what people are doing. And then when we were called into this executive session to explain why we believe we should be in executive session, he was just as flabbergasted as I was. Give it up to Senator Boren, who was absolutely ready to go. She had her statute, everything else, just boom, 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 point by point. He and I were just like, yeah, we're here because we're supposed to be here. Hello.
I feel that as Representative Osborne wasn't prepared to argue his jurisdictional connection, and that's what they wanted us to do, is to argue our jurisdictional connection. And so
why do that behind closed doors and not in front of the public?
Well, that's the other thing. All of that didn't even need to be in executive session.
Right.
That conversation of us presenting could have been done in public, because I found the statute that says what you can do in executive session, and it's actually 10. It's 7 things. Okay, yeah. So it's 7 things: discussing employment, hiring, appointment, promotion, demotion, discipline, resignation of any individual salaried public officer, employee. Discussing negotiations concerning employees and representatives of employee groups, so that'd be like unions. Discussing the purchase of appraisal of property, confidential communications between a public body and an attorney concerning a pending investigation, claim, or action, if the public body, with the advice of its attorney, determines that disclosure will seriously impair the ability of the public to process the claim or conduct or pending investigation, litigation, or proceeding. Permitting district boards of education to hear evidence and discuss the expulsion or suspension of a student. So that only applies to district boards of education, not state ones. Discussing matters involving a specific disabled child. Discussing any matter where disclosure of information would violate confidentiality requirements of state or federal law. So those are the parameters of what you can discuss in executive session. Doesn't say this little mini hearing that you pulled out of someplace on the day of a meeting and make 3 legislators have a little, you know, impromptu hearing to justify why they think they ought to be.
You know, exactly.
What we're seeing here, I guess what troubles me, and one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation, is there's a pattern here to all this. And it's not just, there are 2 state boards of education that seem to have decided that they don't have to follow the law. You know, that we haven't talked at all about the charter school board, which is refusing to follow the state Supreme Court's order that it rescind the St. Isidore contract. And, you know, and then we have the state board of education here that's basically saying we don't have to follow the Open Meetings Act, which requires us to allow legislators whose duties are involved in education, their service on committees and so forth, into executive sessions like this. And I can't recall ever in my career covering government and politics in 3 states that you have a statewide elected official and state appointed boards like that that simply are refusing to follow the law.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting too, because it's not that they're not following the just, it's not that they're just disobeying the law, is that they're placing themselves above the law.
Yes, thank you.
Right. So it's like an extrajudicial sort of operation, right? Like, you know, they are not bound by the regular laws of the state governing conduct and accountability. And so it just makes me wonder even more, because, you know, we had talked to Representative John Waldron last week, and he was like, it's going to, every Wednesday he does something every Wednesday. And sure enough, he did. And I mean, just like clockwork. But it's like, whenever he does this, it's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, it's all the smoke and mirrors to really kind of hide what's not happening behind him. And so it just makes me wonder even more what they're actually discussing at those executive sessions, right? Like, but I mean, back to the licensure revocation, why should that be behind closed doors? why? You know what I mean? Because they need to set precedent, right? Like they need to be on the record for, this is these are our measures for revocating, revoking. I just that blows my mind that that's where they're deciding to discuss these things and then come out into the light and reveal their decisions. You know what I mean? Like they're not electing a pope here. Okay, so
Well, ideally, you would want if you're operating under due process, so that you don't want to unfairly jeopardize a teacher's reputation while you go through the investigative process. That's why a good reason to have that kind of conversation to protect the integrity and also give the board the chance to look at the evidence before they move forward. And you're, but what they're doing, they're using, and I've seen confidentiality to be used as a weapon in some DHS cases of kids in foster care, then all the, where you're trying to protect government from being seen of misusing due process or misusing procedural systems to take away rights. Then the confidentiality is used as a witness, as a weapon. And I think under this administration, the Walters administration, this Ryan Walters administration of the State Department of Ed, he's using confidentiality as a weapon to prevent Oklahomans from knowing whether or not he's following due process. And you could tell on the agenda items, those that were not getting due process, like the hearing officers' recommendations were being disregarded on the 20 in June. On that agenda, part of the thing that they were going to vote on were to disregard the hearing officers' findings of fact and replace it with their own. And that's very problematic because why have a finder of fact if you're just going to, have this group of people that never looked at the evidence or didn't review anything, supplanting their decision just because they have a grudge against or they've targeted a teacher for some reason. So that's very problematic. And I was when other administrations went into executive session for personnel issues, never had a reason to believe that they were going to circumvent due process and equal protection of teaching certificates in Oklahoma. But with this regime, it's a very big concern that they're surpassing or working around equal protection and due process protections for teachers.
But what if they're
Yeah, and
using,
especially, well, go ahead.
but what if they're using executive session to do worse things, right? And saying they're doing
Exactly.
it to revoke licensure. Like, that's
Yeah.
honestly, I mean, that's honestly what I suspect is happening. Like,
Well, and
because they're.
that's why the statute says, okay, you get to go do executive session in these three or seven categories. But if you're a state board or agency, then a lawmaker that has a jurisdictional connection can observe those executive sessions to make sure that you're staying within those parameters, those seven parameters, that you're not doing something beyond what the statute allows you to do in executive session. And then also it's helpful even if somebody if a board isn't going rogue like the State Board of Education, a lawmaker can learn ways to improve the law, especially if they're confused about a particular aspect of the law, if they're not taking into consideration the expense involved. And by observing it and seeing the deliberations, then it makes the lawmaker better informed to revise law or improve law along the way.
Yep.
I feel like that's a very okay. Yeah, I mean, and theoretically, that would be a great purpose, right? You can't disclose what you hear in executive session. You might come up with ways to improve the processes and da 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 da. But so far, we have seen no efforts on behalf of the legislature to put him in check, right? Like none whatsoever. It's been completely disregarded. So, why is it important that I'm not saying it's not important that you guys were there, but what can actually be done? Because you can run a bill and they can kill it, Right. And so since you guys are the three, and Mike Osborne, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I've met him, but I mean, you're not seeing leaders like caucus leaders step into these meetings, right? So, I mean, why do we need to care about what's happening at these meetings? I want you to answer that because I because it is important, but I don't want to say why. So I don't want to be the one, saying all those words. So,
Jacob.
Well, real quick, just look at one of the examples. Okay, why was Representative Osborne there? It's because nobody even told the teacher that they were going to be on the agenda. They just showed up. The district had no idea what was going on. And so I'm sure they reached out to him. I'm guessing they reached out to him and they were like, hey, can you please go and see if everything's on the up and up in these executive sessions. Again, it's about observing. I think people think we can report and everything. That's not what it's about. It's about us being there to make sure that things are being done in the light rather than the dark. And what that teacher was in trouble for, and it goes a lot deeper than that, is in 2019, apparently somebody hunted down a picture of his kid in a Trump mask for Halloween. And there was like swords flying around. And so the teacher was up for revocation of their license for a picture with their kid in a Trump mask with a sword flying around. What even is that? That's not even anywhere near close to even get your, you can't even get in trouble in the district for that. Like, so how are you even going to try to revoke a teacher's license? Not to mention that teacher, Reagan Kilackey, is the teacher who sued SDE and Ryan Walters for House Bill 1775. So you know they're targeting him.
And
So
that's
there you go.
whistleblower. Yep.
And what this all tells us, and Senator Bourne, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that the first time you decided to go, that Summer Beaumier may have been on the list. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right about that? So what we have here is we have a state superintendent who clear, I don't think it's an overstatement to say we have a state superintendent who is creating an enemies list, and he's wielding the power behind closed doors to threaten and to revoke licenses from those who he doesn't like or who dare challenge him. And in Summer's case, apparently, based on what I've seen online over the weekend, where she's kind of clarified what the situation, they're kind of playing out the clock with her. They just keep kicking this thing down the road,
Well,
and so her. You know, her certificate is not being renewed, but it's just sort of out there and nothing happens.
and Arnold, let me tell you about that real quick, because I asked some questions about that. Since I had a feeling that Norman Public Schools may be in the target zone next, since you know what Superintendent Millarino has done. Thank God he's done, which says we're not going to do a Bible mandate in our schools. We're afraid that. Really, what can a superintendent and a board do? So first of all, they can, it's actually pretty tough to revoke a license. It is, but it's not very tough to suspend one and then to indefinitely suspend it like they did with Summer Beaumier. And you can do that behind closed doors in an executive session without us for really any number of reasons. Like I said, Reagan Kilackey showed up and there wasn't a reason why he was up for his license being revoked. But then we were trying to we looked at some of the other teachers that were up for their license being revoked or suspended, and you can't paint with a broad brush. One of the teachers is up for oh gosh, what was it? They're in trouble for something legit that you can lose your license over, right? So that's the problem. And then sure enough, Superintendent Walters did what? First of all, he didn't call Senator Mary Boren Senator Mary Boren. He called her Mary, which pisses me off. And then he said that she was trying to interdict interfere with them trying to revoke the license of a pedophile. Well, one of the teachers was up for that, but that's throwing everything into one big pile and trying to use it for political purpose purposes once again, which is why you have to have people in these executive sessions to make sure that you can tell what's going on. Okay, is everything on the up and up? And not only that, it's protected by law. So what they're doing is not okay. But then Mary was the one, or I'm sorry, Senator Boren. See, I try. Senator Boren was the one who pointed out to me, they just violated the Open Meetings Act. I didn't catch it. I was like, because it was an hour and a half that they sat there and deliberated about us, and they had lunch brought in. And then when they came back, they obviously had talked about what to do with the rest of the meeting, because they had a motion set up for all these things, and they went ahead and said there's not going to be any more executive sessions for that day, because I believe because we were there. And so that's the part that violated the Open Meetings Act, and I didn't catch that, and Senator Boren did. So give it up to her once again for just being focused on these types of things. I was just very surprised by the whole shebang. You know, I was just like, this is not the way these things work.
So I want to bring up what you just said about, I want to go back to what you just said about how they put all these different alleged misdeeds, right? Like, no matter what the teachers did, they're all put in the same bucket as woke or, you know, worthy of. Okay. So, to me, this is a very direct connection to what he's doing now, that he's targeting so-called undocumented immigrants. Yes. Now, so this is getting into my area of expertise, and literally what happens every time, you know, right wingers go after immigrants is they paint with a broad brush. They call them all undocumented, but there's no way to discern. They have absolutely no methods of discerning, nor should they, right? But it's putting all of the children of color, you know, brown color, that happen to go to public schools are now, you know, prone to being targeted. Just the same way any of these like fairly innocuous former DEI meetings, right? Someone's going to hear something wrong. Someone's going to think something wrong about a kid, and they're going to be put in the same bucket. It's just another witch hunt that he's launching. For political gain. And it's absolutely terrible that it's happening at kids, but it's precisely the same thing as what they're doing with the teachers. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I mean, the research on immigration in the country will tell you that when they talk about undocumented immigrants and, you know, trying to like control that there's absolutely no differentiation made. They go after all immigrants. And so they're all vulnerable and they're all prone to these sorts of measures. And so the man is just ramping up and bringing out every single, you know, like every single arrow in the lunatic's quiver, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's good to see everybody he can think of.
It's good to see the districts are standing up against that too, because that's not even legal. I mean, it just isn't. There's a federal law or federal, it's federal, it's taken care of federally, you know, and there's no mandate.
Care about that in Oklahoma, but yeah, I mean,
I get that, but maybe we can start getting some pushback on that side too. I don't know, but
I just
go ahead.
Can I intersect here? So this is pretty simple, and it's like every day in the Jim Crow South was Ryan Walters Day, because this is just basic targeting. It's targeting not just immigrants or undocumented people. It's targeting communities, school boards, teachers, school leaders who will follow the federal law regarding that area. And so all of these things, you know, it was right before that the pattern that's going on is to target those who stand up for human rights, who stand up for due process and equal protection, who stand up for the Constitution, who
well,
are against.
I think that's it. I think that's it. It's targeting the federalization, you know, federal intrusion.
Yes, it
into
is.
Our state systems. And
it totally is. And that's, they're resentful all the way back from 1964, when the Civil Rights Act was passed and we had integration. These same folks, they've been muttering around all this time about how the federal government was wrong back then, how the federal government was wrong
with states' rights crowd.
Yes, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And so they're just using an old strategy from their playbook to use these policies to shake out those who are going to stand up for All
what makes it unique, Senator, is that for the first time in two generations, we have a Supreme Court that might protect
yes.
that.
And they've worked very
and that's
hard
why
to
they're
get that.
doing it. And that's
Yes.
why they're doing it. They're trying to get these things through the courts to get them in the
Yes,
Supreme Court that they think
absolutely.
will
So
favor.
they actually accomplish a lot. They get their case to the Supreme Court to overturn precedents. They find out who the Mary Borens and the Jacob Rosencrantz are in the world, who are gonna not sit quietly while they return our state back to a way of life that we all thought that we had defeated. And so they find out who we are. They find out the Norman Public Schools. They find out the Bixby Schools. They find out the Edmond Schools, all the districts and school boards throughout the state who are going to follow the federal law. They find out who these people are. And they think that they can target us and pick us off one by one and threaten everybody else with their teaching certificate to stay quiet. And that's the strategy. It's an old strategy. It was in World War II in Germany. Same thing. We saw that. We see this strategy all the time where a bully will take one or two people and treat them horribly, and the others in the community get terrified that they're going to be mistreated that way. And so they cower and they get quiet and they go off into the corner. And as long as those that are talking are few and far between, they can pick us off. They can, but if lots of school districts stand up against it, he can't pull all the teaching certificates of all those school districts in the state. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of people that you're starting to target. And at some point, the threshold is too much to be able to target and bully people. And that's, I think, what Oklahomans have got to do is if more people start talking and there's too much for him to monitor and bully into submission, then it's a game plan that won't work.
See, I think it's a little bit worse than bullying, to be honest. I think it's a little tyrannical, you know.
Well, I'm saying
I think
it is tyrannical, but it's still the same. It's the same. Actually, bullying is the entry level to genocide. Like, the same tactics end up in that ultimate horrific place. And so I'm using that word bullying not as a little baby word, but I'm using it in the school context as a school counselor and where little kids end up being dead. But it's the same skill set. It just has a bigger chair to sit in. But targeting people is a huge part of tyranny, authoritarianism, fascism. You have to have a group of people that you target in order to scare people to not holding you accountable.
Are you as shocked as I am, considering how many school districts he's gone after and teachers he's gone after, that the Republican supermajority has been so quiet on this?
No, I'm not. I'm not, because they got power by watching somebody dunk somebody's head in the toilet. That's how they got their power. They got their power from being quiet.
Well, not only that, but it's not like these superintendents haven't been the same ones banging the pavement at the Capitol, like pleading for help for, you know, decades now. I mean, Rob Miller is no stranger to anyone at the state Capitol.
Right. I'm talking
Rick
about
Cobb
the
is,
politician. Yeah, I'm talking
yeah,
about
I mean, they are not strangers. And I can literally remember, like, you know, roomfuls of superintendents talking to the Democratic caucus, you know, about the budget. And, you know, at the time, the caucus members were like, well, where are they? Right. But these superintendents are no strangers to the people there, and they just don't get listened to.
Well, I think this is a backlash to the walkout. I think that the Republican supermajority was threatened and offended that superintendents had, you know, that much clout to increase school funding the way that they did by supporting teachers in the walkout. And I think to answer the question that was posed, am I surprised that the GOP supermajority is not doing more? And my answer is no, because they do not know how to refute or push back against their own people who are targeting and abusing authority in a tyrannical way. All they know to do is to kind of put their eyes down, hope that it stops, have a little side conversation. Hey, man, do you think you really have to be that harsh? And they That's all they know. That's the only skill set they have. To get the skill set to step up and stand up against a bully is a skill set that you actually have to learn and use and try. And you have to be willing to sacrifice your own power to be able to stand up against that tyranny. And they don't know how to do that. It's
well,
a skill set
I
they
think
don't
some
know
of
how
them
to
who
do.
Would, to be honest, I think some of them who would just got voted out.
Exactly.
Instance, the man who should have been your Senate leader. You know, I think Greg McCourtney would have been a wonderful check on a lot of this craziness.
Well, he's still in office. I mean, he's still in office until November.
But you know, there's some smart people on the other side of the aisle, and they have to know they're playing with fire here, because when you attack the treasures of a lot of communities in Oklahoma, which is their public schools, it's going to come back and bite you. And people are going to say, how come you? And I would encourage people to remember this when Charles McCall decides he wants to run for governor, or John Eccles decides he wants to run for attorney general, or who knows where Greg Tree ends up, that these folks all were on the watch and had the power to rein in a lot of this stuff, but they didn't lift a finger.
And in fact, they often threw matches into the fire.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you got to understand too, I mean, there's so many different pieces and parts of this moving around. Don't forget, there's so many people trying to run for governor now. I mean, there's rumors that Walters will. I know that's a nightmare, but
that may have ruined it. So
one of the newest rumors is that, and I would actually prefer this, is that Mark Wayne Mullen may run for governor, and he may run for that open Senate seat. Listen, I'll take Walters in DC as far away as he can get from the darn state superintendent position, because he can just be another Marjorie Taylor Greene with no power, right? Just like screaming and yelling and nothing. But anyway, everything that Senator Boren has brought up is 100,000,000% right. However, I do delve into the other side of the aisle a lot, okay? And I do have conversations with folks, and a lot of them are horrified. They love their public schools. I'm talking mostly rural Oklahoma. And they listen to their superintendents. They especially in rural Oklahoma. Now, they were very angry about the whole the whole voucher thing. They fought against that for a long time. They united with Democrats for about 6 of the 7 years I've been up there, and then finally were peeled off because, you know, the leadership, Charles McCall, wants to run for governor and wanted to say that he had, you know, school choice or whatever else, blah 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 blah. And of course the governor wanted that, and Greg Treat's been dreaming of that all day forever. So those, all these different moving parts are happening, while at the same time they don't really like the way Walters is doing things, not because they don't like Walters or the things that he says. It's because it's putting too much spotlight on them, and they want him to just go away. So what she said, the most important thing she said, they put their eyes down, they put their heads down and just hope that this goes away, that it's not going to hurt them politically. We have to make sure that it hurts them politically. That's our job. That's why we are getting out there. At least I am, on social media, trying to educate folks as to what's going on. That's why we're trying to say, hey, what normally is just like a thing that maybe could just be fixed by saying, please let us in the open meeting, or you violated the Open Meetings Act, and so you need to not do that again. It's such a big deal because it's being done over and over again by a regime that just doesn't seem to care. We need to make them own. Well, they do own that, but we need to make sure that the Oklahoma the people out of Oklahoma understand that as well. And it's not just Democrats. So I work very hard across the aisle to try to get folks to be like, you seriously cannot be okay with what's going on here, because these are your public school districts they're coming after. Yes, I know Rob Miller. He's a hero of mine. I've known him forever. I read his blog. He's one of the reasons why I'm a public education warrior. But he's also Bixby. That's red. That's as red as it gets. Moore. It's as red as it gets. So you have these superintendents who are standing up, and they're doing it not because they are, you know, trying to be brave or anything. They're doing it because they know they're on the right side of things. They absolutely are. They have the Constitution on their side with these types of things, and this overarching whatever Walters and his board. The board's the key. You know, we talk about Walters so much, but, you know, we empowered Stitt to take over these boards back in 2019. Not me, but the Republicans in charge.
to hire and fire these board members. That's where we're at right now. That's why we have the issues that we're seeing with the boards doing whatever it is that Walters or Stitt tells them to do. Instead of them being a check against these people, they're rubber stamping it. And that gives these people teeth too. Otherwise, Walters would just be screaming in the wind.
And that's what. And let's note that the governor isn't saying much of anything at all about any of it.
Right.
He's completely quiet. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I think observing the deliberations is so important. Because are they a rubber stamp board? Do they ask questions? Do they ask insightful questions about the impact of the decisions that they're making? Or are they just looking like, okay, let's work through the agenda next. What's on the agenda next? Yes, no, take a vote. And if you don't observe the deliberations, you really can't tell if it's a rubber stamp board or if it's like a willful, thoughtful, responsible decision-making process that they're having. And, you know, given everything that we've been through, I think it's very reasonable to assume that because the governor can pull them off the board if they don't vote the way that they want to, that you turn into a rubber stamp board, that there's no personal credibility that you bring into that conversation, like the school board compared now than back when Sandy Garrett was state superintendent, or even when like Janet Barisi was in state superintendent, the accountability, you know, because Joy Hoffmeister sat on that board. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, the way she was trying to protect public education when Janet Barisi was the state superintendent, because she was trying to be accountable as a board member, is the reason why she ended up running for, you know, state superintendent. Well, that's not happening anymore. And that's why observing those deliberations is very important to be able to see.
Yeah, I know Arnold's got to step off, but I just want to say, too, like, we know that, you know, there are no, like, the professional staff at the SDE has been decimated, right? And so the work that goes into well-structured, efficient board meetings, first of all, that's a lot of work, right? Like, the leadership at SDE, that's a lot of work that they should be undergoing. And then there's a lot of work that they should be doing with the board members. And I just don't assume that there's any of that work actually happening. Because there's simply not the expertise at the State Department of Education any longer to do those sorts of, you know.
Well, and that's why they, yeah.
In addition to the chaos of the lack of accountability, the lack of, you know, the lack of, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the word. I think you know what I'm trying to say, though. Anyways, I'm sorry, Senator.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why they tripped up on, why they were getting the executive session thing all wrong, but that's why they tripped up over on themselves violating the Open Meetings Act by combining the second executive session agenda items into the first executive session conversation. And because they don't have good staff, that the lawyers that they've had aren't there anymore. That's why they had to get to an outside law firm.
They don't need the professional staff.
Right.
They should be stacked with counsel at that agency, right?
Like, yes.
Most agencies, I mean, especially with the size and the scope and the financials, mm-hmm. you know, behind mm-hmm. it, they should be stacked with incredible minds, and they just don't have that. So that piece alone is missing from the whole board structure. And that's a huge problem. So maybe he's just ad-libbing and soft-shoeing up on stage because that's all he can do.
Well, I want to go back to one of the things you said, is that he said that I was trying to stop him from revoking certificates of people that harm children. It's very important for everybody to understand this one thing. If me and Jacob and Mike Osborne were sitting in that executive session, there is absolutely nothing we could have done to change any kind of vote, to persuade a vote, to interact with any of the content. All we knew that we could do was sit, observe, use our eyes and ears. We could not use our mouths in any way in any of those deliberations. So we could not stop them for voting on anything. So it's really curious to me, how could just observing be so threatening to him? And there's two reasons. One, they think that we would have gotten confidential information and just walked out and told the whole world. And we told them I understand that what we sit as any other executive committee member, that whatever is supposed to be confidential, we're supposed to keep confidential. That was my understanding. So the second reason why they would be threatened is it'd be like having where you feel so territorial to not have anybody like that's such an intimate place, like walking into somebody's living room and uninvited, that you're sitting there on their couch and you're watching how they go about the house, that Superintendent Walters felt as if us being in the room was such an invasion of his privacy and his comfort level that he could not tolerate that kind of dynamic in his executive sessions. And I think that that's very troubling, that there's such a territorial attitude towards those executive sessions that he can't share space with people that are by statute authorized to be in those executive sessions.
Yeah, and also, what is he hiding, or what are they hiding?
Exactly. Like,
that's the thing. If you have nothing to hide, then okay, I can understand exactly what Senator Boren just said. And they did bring it up when they were giving us that inquisition. They basically were like, you know, you can't say anything. Mary already knew. Senator Boren already knew that. She was like, yeah, I understand it as what she just shared just now. We will just be observers. And that's exactly the case that we made. And that's all we said we were going to do. I think they want that spelled out somehow. Is that what you kind of caught as well?
No, I think that they, because they don't have good legal counsel, and they're afraid that they're doing things that they know are not above board, they're fearful that word's going to get out, either leaked or shared in some way, that they're going to be found out to doing things that they're not supposed to be doing.
I think they just don't want people to know that they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It could be. It could.
I
just
really
be
think
that.
It might be that simple, that there's nothing there.
Right.
And if well, you and another thing, the outsider too, so to actually members. Have some provision over them, you know, like.
They barely had a quorum too, which was very, very interesting because they all knew what was going on that day. And they barely had a quorum. There was, what, 4 out of the 7 there, including Walters.
Oh my
gosh. That's pretty intense as well. I wonder if maybe there's some cracks in the board.
The thing is that the confidentiality fear that they had, the regents had Senator Pugh in the regents meeting when they were talking about a lawsuit, and they were talking about the next chancellor or the chancellor resigning. And they didn't say, hey, Senator Pugh, we're really afraid of you being here because you're just going to go blab all over the world and talk about what happened in executive session. The understanding for all the other agencies that have sufficient staff and legal counsel is that when you step in, it stays confidential. So
they have institutional knowledge to their benefit as well, right? Like,
yes,
there hasn't been the utter depletion of any sort of expertise like there has at SDE. And I mean, just like the multiple ways in which it manifests, you know, on SDE compared to, say, the regions. Those folks know their stuff, right? I mean, they're representing a law school, no less, right? Like, they know you can't have more than 3 regents in a room, or it's a meeting. They have to have quorum and it's open records, right? Like, they know all these things. It's just night and day difference the way it's run for now, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. Senator Boren, it was a pleasure to have this opportunity with you. We haven't had a chance to have you on yet. And Representative Rosecrans, my representative, always good too. So thank you both.
Well, Dr. Martin, it's so nice to get to meet you. And
yes, thank you.
Thank
so
you
very
for
much.
All your work. So you have a PhD in what?
Mass communication.
Oh, okay. Did you go to OU? Which college
nope,
did you go
to? I went to the University of Iowa.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So Big Ten.
That's a wonderful yep.
Big Ten,
communication.
Big Ten's a thing. Yep. So, yep. Their journalism program is excellent. So, but it was a pleasure talking to both of you. So thank you both so much. And we will have this conversation.
Okay.
All right.
Care.
Talk to you later, Mary.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.